You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Dr. King's words seem as relevant today as when first uttered. They speak to the same fears and anxieties around the Vietnam War that many are experiencing as we march towards war with Iraq. U.S. Congressman John Conyers was responsible for drafting the legislation that became the Martin Luther King Holiday Act. As a young man, Congressman Conyers was engaged in the civil rights movement. Peace Watch spoke with him earlier today.
I thought of what would be the most fitting tribute for the most impressive human being I've ever met in my life. Mm-hmm. And the answer was that there should be a national legal holiday celebrating his birth. And so I called Coretta King to get her blessings on this undertaking, and I introduced the bill 4 days after he was assassinated.
4 days after he was assassinated.
That's right.
And so how long was the struggle to get that bill passed?
15 and one half years.
Hmm. How would you rank that in terms of your political accomplishments?
Well, it would probably be number one. I'm thinking of the Full Employment and Balanced Growth Act that Senator McGovern and Coretta Scott King, who had stepped in to fill her husband's shoes in the labor movement, who were trying to create jobs. That was in the 70s.
It just occurred to me, you also have signed on recently, or intend to sign on, I believe, to a bill drafted by U.S. Congressman Charles Rangel calling for a reinstatement of the draft.
I'm a co-sponsor of that bill.
A co-sponsor. That's a controversial bill, and I think I'm wondering personally why there's a recall for the draft at this particular time, this critical time in our history.
Well, two reasons. One, we have an unrestrainable chief executive who seems bent on going to war.
And so therefore we want to...
And so the second reason then would be we're going to need a draft system, and we're going to need a more equitable one than we've ever had before. This is a patriotic calling to defend your country, and if we're defending our country, this obligation should be spread equally across the population, particularly ages 18 to 26, mm-hmm. men and women.
Well, right now we have a voluntary draft. I mean, why reinstitute a mandatory draft?
Because we're running out of people. Ask the thousands upon thousands of reservists who were recalled for the Afghanistan adventure and find that after they had served their tour, they were not let go, but they were forced to stay for longer service. Our ranks are thinning fast. Mm. Besides, if you look around the possible military obligations and the manpower requirements, it doesn't take much to imagine circumstances that would lead to far more people than we have now.
Yeah, if you do the math, you're right. But how do we... You said that what's needed is a more equitable draft. What is in the bill that you're co-sponsoring that would guarantee that? Or, yeah, that would guarantee that.
It would require mandatory service of 2 years for everybody between the ages 18 to 26 with very few exemptions. One would be health. The second would be if a person was in the process of completing high school. And the third would be a conscientious belief against war, in which there would be alternative service of 2 years required in the Homeland Security Department or some other acceptable alternative form for service.
Mm-hmm. And so weren't there exemptions available during the Vietnam War? And it seems like history has proven that regardless of how the bills are written, ultimately what happens is that more poor and people of color end up serving in the military and on the front lines.
Well, that's because there was never a bill like this before. That's what this bill is about.
So there are absolutely no opportunities for loopholes for rich and famous.
The powerful, the influential, and their progeny will not be able to duck service unless they meet the three exceptions that I've stated.
Well, I hope you're right, Congressman. I think history doesn't prove that, though.
Well, we never had a bill. History has never had a chance to prove this. That's what you're talking about is the problem I'm trying to correct.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't hope that that history proves it.
Okay.
There was never a bill that didn't allow for exemptions.
But
there was never a selective service that didn't create the loopholes of which I am now closing.
How do we know that by the time this bill passes the House and the Senate and the conference committee and lands up on the desk of the president, that someone in this very conservative, hawkish, wealthy Congress and Senate won't have found a way to add some sort of amendments that will ultimately end up as loopholes?
Well, I don't have any more insurance about that than I do have about my King Holiday bill, my reparations bill, my Full Employment and Balanced Growth Act, my bill to allow people who serve their terms as people who've committed crimes and are discharged that would have the right to vote. There's no guarantee on any bill that anybody introduces that it won't get changed if more powerful forces intervene.
Mm-hmm.
So I wish I could guarantee this.
Are you afraid it might backfire?
No. I've never thought of how could a bill requiring across-the-board service backfire?
Well, because I would think you said earlier that the intention is to make it more equitable. And if it ends up not necessarily being a more equitable draft, then it could backfire.
Well, that's a way of looking at it. But if the military requires more people than are voluntarily joining, they merely activate the present Selective Service law, which is inequitable.
Congressman, thank you so very much for being our guest today.
I always enjoy talking to you.
Thank you, and happy MLK Day, Martin Luther King Day.
Same.
U.S. Representative John Conyers of Michigan, author of the MLK Jr. Holiday Act. To commemorate Dr. King's activist legacy, hundreds of thousands of protesters of the war impending with Iraq are mobilizing to march on Washington, D.C. this Saturday. Peace Watch has compiled speeches given at a large protest rally in Los Angeles last weekend to give you an idea of the range of voices speaking out for peace. You'll hear Congresswoman Maxine Waters, California State Assemblywoman Jackie Goldberg, actor David Clennon, Palestinian activist Michelle Shahadeh, and Iraqi-American immigration attorney Ben Awardi.
be with you today because I want to send a message back to Washington. I am not afraid of George W. Bush. I do not support a strike on Iraq. I do not support war anywhere. George W. Bush has not been able to make his case. The inspectors have found nothing. It is a contradiction to say that he's got to hit Iraq when North Korea says, hey, look at me, I got it too. What do? We start to recognize that there is nuclear capability in a lot of countries, including Pakistan and India and Israel and South Africa and the United States of America. It is time to understand that you cannot have peace by bombing innocent people and children and families. If we want peace, we must learn to negotiate. We must learn to come to the peace table. We must believe that we can live on this earth together with people of all kinds from everywhere. Peace! Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here with my good friend, Assemblywoman Jackie Goldberg, who has always been about peace. Let her know that you appreciate her presence here today also.
Thank you. It is important to say that it is wonderful that you are here, but this cannot be the only thing you do. You must write every member of Congress and tell them you will not accept war in your name. You must write every member of the City Council of Los Angeles and tell them to have a resolution opposing this war. You need to write your senators and your assembly members in Sacramento and tell them to have a resolution opposing this war. You need to do it over and over and over and over again, because the only thing that will stop this war is all of us in the streets. Thank you very much.
In Britain, train drivers refused to move a freight train carrying ammunition believed to be destined for British forces being deployed in the Gulf. And the railway managers canceled the Ministry of Defense service after the crewmen said they opposed Prime Minister Tony Blair's threat to attack Iraq. That action by the British railway workers is a powerful demonstration that we are not alone. And one of the most important messages coming out of today's march and rally is that we are not alone. George Bush and Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld would like us to think we're alone, but we're not. I believe that every person here today represents hundreds of other Southern Californians who oppose this war. I'm talking about ordinary Americans who all too often are made to think that they are alone. We're here today to show our fellow Americans that they are not alone. We say that if you think George Bush does not have the moral stature to lead this country into any war, you are not alone. If you think George Bush is not even the legitimate president of the United States, you are not alone. And if you suspect that all the reasons and all the excuses for this war come right down to the control of petroleum, you are not alone. If you think the U.S. Congress and the U.N. Security Council were bullied and were bribed into backing George Bush's war, you're not alone. And if you think that the country you love is being turned into an American empire that is rotting from within, then you are not alone. And finally, if you even suspect that this war is unjust, this war is illegal, this war is fundamentally immoral and fundamentally un-American, then you are not alone. Thank you.
I once was here in this building detained as an immigrant, and I always thought that this site will not be nice to look at. But today I tell you, I'm proud to be here to see the rainbow of colors standing out here to tell the people of this government that you can detain us. You can try to deport us, but you will never can silence us to be a dissent against this war, until we stop it. Are you with me? You know, the Bush administration is preparing to wage an aggressive attack against Iraq. They want us to believe that this war is being waged for a humanitarian reason, to rid the Iraqi people of a dictator. But in reality, what this war is outlined in a document which is entitled the National Security Strategy of the United States, which outline that the United States will get a military supremacy over the entire earth, a goal never attained even by Rome. Are we going to allow them to do that?
No.
They want us to believe that we are going to kill Iraqis because we are threatened by them. This administration, supported by corporate scandal-ridden corporations, want us to believe that they're doing it because of our security. Do you believe them?
No.
But again, today is a loud and clear message to them that when they are warmongering in D.C., the movement against the war is growing and the resistance is growing, not only here at home, but abroad also. For example, the Palestinian people have been fighting for decades, and despite the vicious attack against them, they are still fighting because their cause is just and our cause is just, and together we will win. It is really great to see whites, blacks, browns, red, yellows locking hands together, shoulder to shoulder, to send one message, first to this administration that we are against your policies, but second, a message to the Iraqi people, to the Palestinian people, to the people of the world, that the people of the U.S. is sending them a message of hope and peace, and that we are with them in this struggle. Today, the United States people are saying that the 21st century is not going to be shaped according to Cheney's ideas or Rumsfeld's vision or Ashcroft's fundamentalism, but is going to be shaped by the ideals of democracy, freedom, liberation, and justice for all. Thank you.
To reject this brutal war against the Iraqi people. We salute you as we stand here together to denounce American-sponsored Israeli terrorism against our brothers and sisters in Palestine who struggle for life and justice each and every day. George Bush has tried to do everything possible to reduce Iraq and the Iraqi people to one man and one issue, oil. And now he has declared war. War on the poor, war on the sick, war on the defenseless, war on freedom. This war is not new. Iraq is made up of 23 million human beings, not just one man. Iraq is mothers, sisters, fathers, brothers, not just oil. Iraq is tens of thousands of babies born into the suffocating world of sanctions, not just collateral damage. Iraq is 23 million people who have been held at gunpoint before the world's most powerful firing squad for the last 12 years. And still, Bush accuses the Iraqi people of evil and terrorism. I have personally witnessed my family be ripped apart in Iraq. George Bush, I have watched your war destroy my family and destroy my country. I have watched the devastating effects of American bombs as they contaminate Iraq's soil, infect Iraq's rivers, destroy the health and the future of an entire generation of Iraqi children. The effect of the American-imposed sanctions against the Iraqi people has been nothing short of genocidal. They have done nothing but isolate and impoverish an entire civilization, cripple civilian hospitals, and starve more than 500,000 children to death. And now President Bush has plans to destroy what is left of Iraq once and for all. I stand here before you on behalf of my brothers and sisters in Iraq and say, let Iraq live. 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 Thank you.
Special thanks to Dan Pavlish at Pacifica Station KPFK for preparing that report. Finally, the creator of the award-winning weekly cartoon and social and political satire, This Modern World, Tom Tomorrow. This Modern World appears in about 150 papers across the country, including the New York Times and the New Yorker. Tom once said that as a cartoonist, he wanted to change the world, and he gets his ideas from unusual places.
Lot of Fox News. I find that getting angry is a good place to start when you're looking for inspiration for a cartoon. And since they are effectively the broadcast arm of the Republican Party, I find a lot of inspiration there. The basic underlying theme is that President Bush is right, the war on Iraq is right. Anyone who questions the motivations of the war or the implications of the war, what have you, they're just a bunch of crazy peaceniks and we should discount them. And Fox is very clever because they will present the opposing point of view, but they tend to present it only to undercut it. But I see these things, I get angry about how it's being presented. Okay, here's a good example. This week there was an op-ed piece actually in the Times by David Brock, conservative writer, explaining what real Americans think. And it was the sort of thing, it's been bugging me a while. There's this notion among conservative, you know, wealthy conservative pundits who spend all their time inside the Beltway or in New York, mm-hmm. who profess to speak for ordinary Americans. And so my next cartoon is about a group of conservative pundits who are discussing their deep affinity for some mythical ordinary Americans who they've obviously never met or had any dealing with. I just have the pundits talking about how they understand mm-hmm. Americans much mm-hmm. better than liberal elitists. And they're saying, yeah, and, you know, they're going to bowling alleys and hootenannies and stuff like that, because they obviously have no idea, because they obviously don't. And
completely,
I just find
out of
it
touch.
Ludicrous when these conservative elitists get up on Fox News or write op-eds and start talking about, you know, what real Americans believe. I mean, I think Americans are a very, it's a big country. Mm. There's a lot of people out there and they believe a lot of things. If you read the newspaper at all, there are many, many people all across the country who are very disturbed about this upcoming war. It's not just this sort of, you know, binary right or wrong. I think that Americans are much more complicated than these conservative elitists give them credit for.
At what point in your life, Tom, did you decide to devote your talents and creative energy to being a political cartoonist?
It sort of just happened in a way. I mean, I was always interested in cartoons and cartooning. You know, ever since I was
did draw a lot when you were a
small kid.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and I had a cartoon that ran in a few papers up to the point of the Gulf War. It was of the first Gulf War. It was not specifically politics played a role in it, but it was not an entirely political cartoon. And when the Gulf War came along, it seems sort of banal and obvious in retrospect, but a little light bulb went off over my head as if I were in a cartoon, and I thought to myself, oh, I have a public soapbox, and started using it more toward that end.
Are there any sacred cows, anything that you would not make fun of?
Well, I mean, that's a hard question to answer, because it's all very situational. If there's something that I'm not going to go out of my way and make fun of widows and orphans or something.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's a specific instance in which widows and orphans are behaving badly, perhaps that would be necessary. I don't know. It's very situational. But I don't go. I honestly don't go out of my way to offend people. I take the issues as they come up and manage to offend people no matter what I do.
The author Kurt Vonnegut said that you're the wry voice of American common sense, humor, and decency, which has been scorned or ignored by big-time journalists. What do you think is missing from mainstream journalism and media, particularly on the war covered in Iraq?
Skepticism. I mean, if Bush stood up tomorrow and said Saddam has a plan to smother the world in chocolate pudding, this would be reported. And this would be debated. And yes, you would have some Democrats saying, "Well, there's no evidence of this chocolate pudding." There are very few media sources where anyone would just come out and say this is complete nonsense.
Who do you think is the most important political cartoonist of our time, and how do you compare yourself to the other important political cartoonists of today?
Yeah, leaving myself out of the equation, the only ones that I really see being discussed or passed around in any way, the only ones I ever see being discussed or passed around online are myself, Ted Rall, David Rees, who does Get Your War On, and Aaron Magruder, who does The Boondocks. So leaving myself out of this, I would say those three are probably the most important anti-war cartoonists out there right now. But it's only largely because almost no one is really doing this.
Mm-hmm.
There are lots of people who are doing work and maybe even making good points, but it doesn't seem to really hit a chord with people. But
yes.
You know, that's half of what's important, is reaching people and getting them to read your work and pay any attention at all.
Award-winning cartoonist Tom Tomorrow of This Modern World. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. by Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is Granger Helvey. We had production assistance from Adil Hamad of KPFA, Keith Shalajian, Marcus Tyler Brown, Sam Silsby, Chris Harrion, and Benta Berkland. Thanks to Pete Karakis, RadioForAll.net, and Shane Rock at WebActive.com for web help. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. You can send us your feedback to peacewatch@pacifica.org. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Thank you for listening.